You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
It is 9 minutes after 11. This being a Wednesday, it means, of course, it is time for the Entrepreneur Corner.
702 and Cape Talk, Entrepreneur Corner.
And I've no doubt you're going to enjoy yet another fascinating backstory to an entrepreneurial journey, because that's what we've become renowned for in this particular slot, so much so that many of you are now actually emailing saying, I want to come in this slot. Well, you're going to have to be a rock star like Botlali Tsetlo. Botlali, thanks so much for coming to the studio.
Hi, Eusebius. Thank you for having me over.
Now, she has a salon called Hatcheral. Hatcheral, how do you pronounce it?
Yeah, Hatcheral.
Hatcheral. Yeah. But I must tell you, before I even noticed the hair, because obviously if someone is in the hair business, you immediately want to check out their Harriets to see whether they actually look after their own hair. But the first interesting thing are those awesome glasses that you're wearing.
Thank you.
They're very cool. What are they? Describe them to the listeners.
So, I mean, wearing...
Why are you laughing, dude? They're not welding glasses. That's actually stylish. Couture.
Spectacles tend to be boring, and because I have to wear them all the time, it's restricting. So I always I'll get sunglasses and just replace the lenses with prescription lenses.
I'm going to have to take a picture. We're going to make those go viral, not just because of your hair, but because of that as well. I want to start a little bit with your journey. We'll pick up your life story. I suppose when you were working in financial services. Now, some of us can't count. Some of us admire people who study economics and end up in the financial sector. Tell us a little bit about that part of your early career.
So I studied economics at the University of the Free State and started working at the Reserve Bank. I was part of a team that managed the foreign reserves, and that's the bank's assets denominated in foreign currency, trading government bonds. It was interesting. I learned a lot. Mm. And after that, I moved to NOAA, which is a brokerage firm, and I was there for about 2 years.
That sounds very clever. And in that time, what was your experience inside the state, inside corporates? Because obviously one advantage of just having a full-time predictable job in a big conglomerate is that although you're a cog in the wheel, the plus side is that you also have predictable income.
Yeah, definitely. Having come from studying and then sort of working, when you're studying, it's just to pass. And when you get into work and having to learn, and at that time, I joined a team that had just a reserve management team that was fairly new. So the bank was starting to manage its own reserves internally. Mm. They have external fund managers, but there was a lot of skills transfer, which was awesome at the time for us to learn how to manage our own reserves.
Unfortunately, life happens, and one of the weird things about our bodies is that they're incredibly resilient, and the body's a remarkable thing. Mm-hmm. At the same time, the body can also be very vulnerable. Eh? It's absolutely, absolutely bizarre. So you had an important part of your life journey that I want you to share with a little bit, that it was really the beginning of your entrepreneurial journey, but through no choosing of your own, when you actually fell ill.
Yeah. In 2008, I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis. It's an autoimmune disease. So basically, something triggers the immune system to have antibodies that then attack the body. They attack healthy cells. So in the case of rheumatoid arthritis, they actually attack the joints lining. You also get multiple sclerosis is also an autoimmune disease, and that attacks nerve cells. Lupus is another one, attacks kidneys and skin and other organs. And so 2008 onto 2009 was a real challenge physically, because my joints were swollen, were stiff, I had a lot of fatigue, and simple things like brushing my teeth because I had to lift my arm was painful. Mm. So it became like a serious challenge to work. And at that point, you've got plans about your life, your career, and this is like a shock, it completely throws you off. So end of 2009, I stopped formal employment, and the idea was just to take time out and to go, get better and just focus on the body healing.
That must be extremely hard for a woman who's competitive. You have fascinating places that you're working in, and you are career driven, and suddenly you've got to focus on keeping yourself healthy So much so that actually you needed to exit your job.
Yeah, it was. And it was tough. I mean, that first year at home, because I didn't even realize how much of my own identity had attached to what I do, the people around you. And you know, I was not ready for that. And a lot of it was very internal. So it wasn't even about what people are, you know, outside. It was just me and my definitions of who I am. And, you know, and you're 35 and it's like, shoop, okay, now that's it. Like, so that was scary. That was, and I'm always, so I'm the sort of person that's always moving. I need to be doing stuff. So that was tough. So I was calling my husband like 5 minutes when he's at work. I'm like, what you doing? You know, 10 minutes later, you at work. So it was. So I needed to sort of pull back and I was actually forced to spend a lot of time by myself, which is scary when you've sort of gotten used to always, you know, being quick.
Being in the rat race.
Yeah.
But as these things, of course, work out, is that it's amazing how serendipitous some of these horrible, unchosen experiences can be. Because during that time, Mom, which was your first venture into business, found herself suddenly having to bake cupcakes.
Yeah.
I was hoping you'd bring some.
Yeah, it. You know, it was, looking back, it was a blessing. Really, and I look back and I think I deviated so far out from who I am that the correction had to be hard. And the illness was that hard because I'd gone that far off. And being at home, I had time and my daughter's like, Mommy, let's bake. And I did. And that moment when I started decorating the cupcakes was like I'd been drowning, I'd been underwater for a long time, and then I just come up for air. And that was reconnecting with my creativity. And for a long time, I'd actually suppressed it. And it had to, and I realized that I had to fall ill. You know, I really had to. Yeah.
And what did you call that first business?
It was Cake Couture.
Look at you with your fancy words.
Yeah.
One of the horrible truths about one's grappling with illness, of course, as you know better than me, Botlali, is that it's not a linear experience. Mm. So there you are coming up, breathing for air. You're finding a creativity you didn't know you had when you were at the bank. Now you have discovered it. You've got this cupcake business. And then the illness comes back to haunt you again because it takes physical effort to be baking these cupcakes.
It did. And it was, so I'd reached a point where I almost felt like this was not it. You know, I knew that I needed to open that door to connect to the next door. But it was hard because you know, I'd found something. And it was hard to actually let go and say, okay, it's not it. What if I'm wrong, you know? And I hung on to it. And the more I tried, the harder and the more painful it was. I'd literally be, like my Saturdays, I'd be on the couch, my body having taken a proper knock, you know? And I knew I had to let go.
But the interesting thing is, right, I've become a cynic about TED Talks. Other than when my friends are doing it, and some of them have done amazing ones that have gone viral, like Sosonke Msimang's recently. But interestingly enough, in preparing for a TED Talk, and I want to know, by the way, what the TED Talk subject was, you had your next moment of unplanned creativity.
Yep. So,
because a girl's got to look good for a TED Talk.
I'd spent a lot of my adulthood sort of in braids, and I remember for the TED Talk, I was like, okay, I want to do braids, and then there I was with my little baby afro, and I was like, sure, okay, what is this thing? You know, because a lot of time I'd sort of hidden it, and it sort of triggered something within me to sort of figure it out, and I'd never really thought about my hair and understood it. And so that was the start of, you know, wanting to figure the hair out and what's good, what's not good for the hair, in terms of sort of the ingredients we use as well. So I started researching and the whole lot of ingredients that were not great for our hair. And, you know, you go to the stores and look what's on the shelves and sure, a lot of them contain that. So, you know, I started reading the labels and wanting to figure it out. Yeah.
What was the TED Talk about?
So when I turned 38, I did 38 random acts of kindness to celebrate my birthday. So I went around doing all sorts of things.
Okay, so this is fascinating because this brings us to the present. That TED Talk and worrying about how your hair is going to land on the internet when your TED Talk goes viral was really the beginning of the journey of where we're at now with Hatch Roll Salon. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, you know, I mean, if we talk about the business, it's interesting to me when entrepreneurs choose to go into sectors of the economy that seem to have an oversupply of service providers. You're also not the first person in this industry to be featured in this particular segment. It must take guts to imagine that you have landed upon the product range for natural hair. What made you think that?
It's interesting because when I sort of look back, when you look at, you know, the world turns and it changes, and with that it brings problems, and we all experience the same problems. And so at any one point, there are a lot of us facing the same problem. And I guess what entrepreneurship does is you bring a lot of who you are into it. It's really an extension, particularly in the beginning. It's an extension of what you hold dear, what's important, what's not, and you just build that into the process and systems of the business. And that's for me what I love about it. It's self-expression.
Okay, we're going to take a break. 20 minutes after 11, this is, of course, the Entrepreneur Corner. And this fascinating journey is the journey of Butla Letsledlo, who's the owner of Hatch Roll Salon. We're going to ask her about the salon, the business model, and more of her entrepreneurial journey thus far on the other side of this break.
702 and Cape Talk. Entrepreneur Corner.
24 minutes after 11. Geez, time flies when you're having fun. So tell us where your salon actually is, and why would I go there rather than back to Bromfontein?
So the salon is in Peterville Centre in Bryanston. We're just focusing on natural hair. So the journey started with the products to solve the hair. And a lot of my clients were complaining that, you know, some of the salons were not really treating their hair as they should have, because chemically processed and natural hair are treated differently. So it was an opportunity to offer services that are just focused on natural hair. We don't blow dry hair, and we don't use any heat. We don't comb the hair. So we're pretty purist. We don't add color. We don't do extensions. So it's just really about
this hair. Is a salon, presumably with mostly black people.
Yeah.
And there is no comb inside?
No.
What?
Not at all. So when I was sort of figuring the hair out and sort of learning to allow the hair to be, the hair is meant to be, it's curly. And combing is sort of forcing the hair to be what it's not. And there are ways of getting the hair to be soft and to work with it without abusing it with a comb.
I find that absolutely fascinating. Were people shocked when they first
they
came
were.
To your salon?
A lot of them
no
come.
No comb?
They don't believe that.
You call it abuse, we call it culture.
A lot of our clients couldn't believe that we actually... We don't comb their hair, and we plait without combing hair. And it's
so what do you use? Just the fingers?
Yeah. And the kids love it, because what it's allowed us to do is, going to the salon used to be very traumatic.
It's meant to be traumatic, well.
Both adults and kids.
Yes.
And, you know, to sit there and have someone work with your hair gently, without pulling, without tugging, without heat, is what is making our salon quite popular.
That is absolutely fascinating. And how long has the salon been up and running?
So it's been operational from April last year. Yeah.
From a business point of view, what have been the biggest challenges for you?
So right at the beginning, because I'd never run a salon before, figuring stuff out was a bit tough. So the learning curve was a bit long, but it's actually allowed us to do things differently. So that was a challenge. Finding a space was a challenge. Trying to explain that, yes, you are an ethnic hair salon, but your service offering is very different, has been tough to landlords, and explaining to them that consumers are not homogeneous. Yeah, so that
wow,
was...
Wow, where does the landlord come in? Why would they care?
We're finding retail space. So at the moment, we fully book most of the time. I have to book an appointment to get my hair done.
Oh, wow. That's a nice problem.
Yeah, it is. So we're turning a lot of people away, which is not great. So we're looking at opening another salon. And that's a challenge at the moment, that most centers have a salon, and trying to explain to them that, you know, the products we use, process of doing hair is very different from what... And I'll go into the salons and find out what they do so that it is different, yeah.
So where do these products come from?
We make them.
You make them yourself?
Yeah.
With a secret recipe?
Yeah. In the kitchen.
What does that do for you in terms of your own involvement? Because now, obviously, as the business is growing, a second salon, you've got to step back from the details, be big picture as the CEO in the making of your incredible conglomerate. At the same time, the journey started with you personally being involved with your own hair, knowing what kind of alternative you're looking to the compulsory burning and comb shredding of your hair.
So the challenge is to put in place all those things that are important into the processes and systems so that I can step back. It's some parts have been very easy for me to do that, and some I'm like, but I'm learning to, because you have to, or else I'll sort of stifle it. But it's been great. It's
how do you market your business?
I actually don't. I let our customers speak for us, and that's how the business has grown. Started with three hairstylists, and we at full capacity at the moment. And it's actually quite deliberate not to go and... Because it's easier for someone to tell a friend. So when clients call in to book, they've already bought our story. And we don't need to start claiming about who we are and try to convince them.
So you don't need our listeners to come to your
We do.
I think that is absolutely remarkable. Before we close the conversation, I wanna bring it full circle. Your health is what led you on this entrepreneurial journey. Mm-hmm. Have you been able to cope physically with this business?
I have. I've learned to listen to my body. So it's been tough. I've had to, when I can feel that, you know what, no, I need time to let go, I do let go. I'm not on medication anymore, so it has gone into remission. Winter is still a challenge. So it's just learning to live with it and taking it a day at a time. Mm. Yeah.
And presumably also learning to delegate, even though the journey started with you.
Yes.
Yeah. We've got one caller on the line. I don't know who this person is. How do I say your name? Reedy Reddy?
Hello, darling. I'm Rinky Randy. It depends who's asking.
Hello, darling. How are you?
Hello, darling. I'm fine. Thank you. I know you're running out of time. I just want to say very quickly, my daughter, Neo, hates the comb. A friend told me about the salon. I took her there in December. Her hair is softening up very nicely. We don't comb it anymore. I went myself last year, December, and I was very, very happy with the environment. You can take a grumpy little three-year-old there. It's a wonderful, warm environment. And she hasn't had a comb in her hair since I first took her there last November, actually.
Oh, that is stunning. So
there's no need
to be tortured with a comb.
You know what? Every time someone touches my hair, I feel like it's the end of the world. The hair dryers and the comb, and I hate it. And as a result, I've been one of those people who neglect hair because it's been a painful, painful exercise for many years. And I think I've found the answer that's convenient, that's quick, and hassle-free. So,
Awesome. Thanks so much for calling in, Reedy. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Yeah? Bye.
Can't get a better endorsement than that from one of my faves, Reedy Clubby. All the best with your journey. We'll check in with you again. I don't know why you're shaking. You're a natural for radio. And I hope you go from strength to strength, both physically and also in your business.
Thank you. Thank you, CBS.